Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. It's Haley Salvian and Sean Gentile here with you. No Max Boltman this week. He's sick or just ignoring us. We're not totally sure what to believe. But that's okay, because we're going to have Dom Lustrician join us later in the show to break down the rest of the NHL trade board. But before we get to that, Sean, big trade last night. Chris Tanev. Traded by the Calgary Flames to the Dallas Stars for a 2024 second-round pick, a conditional 2026 third-round pick, and prospect Artem Grushnikov. That condition, by the way, is if the Stars advance to the Cup Final. If that does not happen, no pick will be transferred. The Flames are retaining 50% of Tanev's $4.5 million cap hit. The Devils are also retaining 50% of Tanev's salary in exchange for Dallas's fourth-round pick in 2026. Believe the Flames get another prospect in exchange there in the three-way deal. So essentially, Sean, my long-winded intro to this podcast today, the Dallas Stars get Chris Tanev at 25% of his salary, which is $1.125 million, without giving up a first-round pick or any of their top prospects. It is a good day to be Dallas Stars bandwagoners like we have been since the start of the season.
Whoa. Wait, hold on. I have to cut you off there.
Dallas Stars fans, I should say, but I was trying not to say fans.
You can call me a Stars bandwagoner since like 2022.
I just mean that we both picked them to win the Stanley Cup this year, okay?
I think I might have picked them to win the West last year,
honestly. Me too. You know what? I've been hitting the Stars drum for a while now. It's a good day to be us, is all I'm saying. Stars fans, good day to be Stars fans like we are.
It's a good day to be Jim Nill too. That's one of my big takeaways. Mm-hmm. And I know we don't need additional evidence that dude's really good at his job, but we got some last night. I think for whatever reason, what tips it over into heist territory for me is that in I guess God bless Tom Fitzgerald if you're Jim Nill for getting involved, but that extra 25% of Tanev's original salary getting retained is where it turns into like, how did this happen? Mm-hmm. Why did it happen on February 28th? Because we, as of last night, we're still 9 days out from the deadline. That seems like, you know, last call at the bar for Craig Conroy, right? That's like a 3 a.m. you know, got to do something or else we're going to be left holding the bag kind of deal. And he did it 9 days in advance. So it was a wild thing to watch play out. I know I wrote this in my trade grade, you know, write up, but with every bit of successive information that we got from the insiders, whether it was Pierre or CJ or whoever, you know, it got worse for Calgary. You're like, okay, pick and prospect, fine. It's a second round pick. Like, the prospect isn't one of the top guys. 50%, 25%, and like you just
and then the condition.
Crazy. Yep.
So our colleague and our dear friend Saad Youssef, who covers the Dallas Stars and the Cowboys, jack of all trades, that boy. He had a tweet before it came out who the prospect was, saying, as long as this isn't Bork, Stankoven, or Bichel, this could go down as a Jim Nill masterpiece. And then like 4 minutes later, Saad tweets, the sourced up guy he is, the prospect is Grushnikov. Somebody probably saw that and was just like, it's not, baby. Like, hey, Jim Nill art, let's go.
Or Saad had an inkling that's what it was going to be and was just waiting to get it nailed down, right? Yeah, like that's primo stuff.
And it really is. And that was my takeaway too, Sean. I think we had the same reaction. It was really one of those trades that you see the initial post and you go, okay, interesting. And then, yeah, every piece of like subsequent information was like, oh, no, it's not a catastrophe for the Calgary Flames. And I think if you look at everything that the Flames have shipped out since Conroy started and everything they've brought in, I think the prospects in the, you know, NHL pieces have been a little bit disappointing. I think Sarankovic has done well. Kuzmenko is a compelling player. They've gotten some first round picks. They have a ton of draft capital. So when you look at the body of work as a whole, it's just fine. I just think if you're a Flames fan, you probably, and maybe it's because there was so much hype around it, and maybe there was like an inflated sense of what Tanev was going to be worth on the trade market, or a Tyler Toffoli, like all these players. Like, I just feel like we heard all these things about how he's high in demand and they want a first round pick. And then all of a sudden it goes, they want a second. And essentially the Flames got a second round pick and then a former second round pick and maybe a third round pick for Chris Tanev at retained salary. And it's not terrible work by Craig Conroy. It's just very good work by Jim Nill. And I'll get your take on this too, Sean. How many times have we talked on this podcast about how the Dallas Stars blue line is thin, to say the least? Like, it was not hard for anybody around the NHL to know that the Stars had a situation on the blue line that's been particularly exposed with injuries to Hackenpaw and Nils Lundqvist. Like, that should have given teams more leverage to get more out of the Dallas Stars and Jim Nill, because they're like, you need us right now. You need this guy more than we do, or whatever. It's a UFA, so maybe that's not true. But like, I guess I'm just surprised and even more impressed that Jim Nill got the second best player on the trade board, not just the second best defender, like the number two guy on most trade boards, without giving up a first round pick or a prospect, especially given his blue line situation.
They needed a right shot at the start of the season to play behind Miro Heiskanen. And that was only exacerbated over the last couple of weeks when we did see Yanni Hakanpaa get hurt, and we did see Nils Lundqvist like get hurt. They should have been trying to upgrade on those guys no matter what.
For sure.
Let alone after they left the lineup, right? I want to say about Tanev, I think part of what makes him so compelling, and we see guys like this often, is you have that intersection of the player that GMs love, old school GMs love, for toughness and, you know, character and playoff, playoff style hockey.
Good analytics guy too.
You see that, and then you see the intersection between actually being a solid player in the modern NHL. Because sometimes
this isn't Ben Chiarot.
It's not Ben Chiarot, but it's also not like Thomas Tatar or whatever. Some guy who has like solid possession numbers, but can't translate that to being an effective playoff guy, right? Sure. Like Chris Tanev is the combination of those two schools of thought, right? And I love dudes like that, where you can see someone who's like, oh my god, like a Jim Nill or whoever is just gonna be foaming at the mouth over this guy because he's a leader and he plays hurt and he plays hard and he plays heavy and all these things. And on top of it, which is still too often an afterthought, he's a really good hockey player. He's a good, effective, modern hockey player.
Yeah,
and he is a true defensive defenseman, not just a defenseman who can't produce offense, because that is still too often something we hear is you just default to saying some guy's a shutdown defender because he doesn't produce points.
Yeah. Right? Versus actually like being good at that craft. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think we've talked about this on the show. I feel like I've had this statement prepared from my time covering the Flames. And, you know, we can even talk about Dom about it when he comes on, but Dom and I did the story. He ripped that signing 4 years ago, 3 years ago, just like they just signed an old man who can't play anymore. And then I got Dom back to be like, you were wrong. Here's all the reasons why. And we did kind of a collaboration on how like the Chris Tanev signing in Calgary, at least in year one, you know, exceeded expectations, at least what people like Dom or other analytics people thought, because it seemed like he was maybe going to fall off a bit. But like, he's very mobile despite his age. Like, he's not going to be the coast to coast end to end guy, but he doesn't need to be, right? Like, he's very good at getting pucks out of the offensive zone. His defensive IQ is unbelievable. Like, to appreciate Chris Tanev is to watch Chris Tanev regularly. Like, the amount of times that he's just in the right spot, that is not an accident. He reads the play. He's in the right spot all of the time. He has a very disruptive stick. It like just kills attacks off the rush, on the cycle, in the zone. Like, hard-nosed guy, like, he'll block a shot with his face. So yeah, Sean, like, he's a warrior in that kind of hockey dude sense, but he's also just like incredibly smart, very, very excellent. And I think it gives Pete DeBoer such a great option on the blue line, because when you think like Miro Heiskanen and Thomas Harley have been playing very well together on that top pair, do you want to put Chris Tanev there to kind of recreate some of the Tanev Quinn Hughes, Tanev Hanifin combination, have the veteran with the young offensively dynamic guy, or do you round out your top four with Tanev on the second pair? Like, you've got options now that they didn't have previously, and I just think this is like such a slam dunk, or at least on paper. Like, obviously we have to see him get there and see him play, but that's the always asterisk that we have to put on this kind of conversation. But to me right now, this is a slam dunk for the Dallas Stars.
If there was a problem with Chris Tanev in 2024, it's that his offensive production and his offensive contributions have tailed off like a little bit from the last
couple. But he's never been known as that guy.
Hold the phone. He hasn't been, but it's dipped a bit. Like, that's fair to say. Yeah. It's happened.
Sure.
On the Dallas Stars, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Who cares? You're going to a team that has three lines that can score goals, has Miro Heiskanen, who's as gifted and all around guy as there is in the league in front of him. Thomas Harley, like you said, is just like he's an offensive dynamo at still a really young age. They don't need that dude to be Chris Tanev from 2 years ago, and even in terms of his offensive game, right? They can like focus on puck retrievals and first passes and playing with an active stick and gap control and all these things that Chris Tanev is still really, really good at. Let all those other dudes handle the point production. We don't need you for that, right?
For sure. Yeah, and I just want to say, too, I think a lot of people look to that 2021-22 Flame season and say, like, oh, well, he's dropped off from there. Literally everyone on the Flames blue line had a career-high season at that point because they were playing in that Daryl Sutter system that prioritized puck possession. They were defensively very stingy, like, very good at going, like, D-zone to O-zone. Like, literally everyone on the blue line, including Erik Edbrandsson, had a career year offensively, so... I'm not saying this to you specifically, Sean,
even
but I think people.
Erik Edbrandsson. Oh,
he did. Everybody. Career highs and like goals, points. Like, it was such a good season for that Flames team that ended up, you know, being one of the best they've had. Johnny Gaudreau, Hart Trophy, da 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 da. But like, people need to stop looking at that season and be like, why isn't Chris Tanev scoring 28 points a year? It's like, because he's like, or 22 points. No, it was 28. Sorry. Like, that's just not. That was a great year for him offensively, but that, like, he's not that guy, and that's not a bad thing. We said this off the top, Sean, you and I both were huge Dallas Stars fans already. I just think this pushes them even further up the conversation of not just the best team in the West, but cup contenders. And that's saying something considering Jake Ottinger hasn't been as good as he has been this season.
That's why I picked him to win the cup. I knew this was going to happen. I knew on February 28th, Jim Nill was going to go out and get a 75% off version of Chris Tanev to play on the right side. Knew it was coming.
I guess the only other part here as it relates to the Calgary Flames in terms of the why and why now, I do not cover the Flames anymore, so I was not boots on the ground talking to Craig Conroy last night. I did kind of listen to a bit of Flames talk where Conroy spoke, and I read Eric Francis's story on Sportsnet and read through some of our stuff. So, you know, just wanted to give credit for where I've seen this. It's a little bit curious to me, like the timing, as you mentioned, Sean, like we're still 9 days out. We heard all of this talk about how in demand he was. So it does make me think, like, did Craig Conroy blink a bit and get worried that a deal was going to dry up or teams were going to start looking at Sean Walker? Like, were the Dallas Stars going to go for somebody else if they didn't take this deal now? I think maybe one of the bigger considerations as we talk about the value of Chris Tanev and this warrior mentality that he plays with, like, he's maybe a guy that you want to trade sooner so he doesn't block a shot with his face and miss the 2 days leading up to the deadline or something. And, you know, Craig Conroy spoke yesterday with Sportsnet again, my best friend Pat Steinberg on his radio show. And essentially was just saying, like, we believed that the time was now. And it seems like it was a combination of the package presented by Dallas and the risk of injury that made this the time to trade Chris Tanev.
I get it, but you know, the return is what it is. Like, you, like, we can, that's the, these are all justifications for an underwhelming return. That's really what it comes down to. So whatever. And I get it. Craig Conroy has done a pretty good job overall. I think since taking that job, but yeah, you know, and it's like, to me, like, it's this is about the Stars. It is, right? Like I think that's my upshot, is you look at that team and you're like, man, okay, they're loaded up, and now we get to watch. It's going to be fun.
And Jim Neal just won GM of the Year a year ago. Back
Give
to back
to again.
Okay, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dom Luschishin. We'll break down a little bit more of the trade, get his thoughts, and take a spin around the rest of the trade board, because we're 8 days out? 8 days out from the NHL trade deadline that's coming up on the Athletic Hockey Show.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're gonna love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
All right, welcome back to the show. Welcome back to Dom. He joins us for the first time this season, and he just got back from a nice vacation. Sean, why are you looking at me like that? Has Dom been on this season? Did I just forget? No, we've cut Dom out. We ditched Dom for Max.
I think Max was in Hawaii too. Like, this is garbage.
When do I get to go to Hawaii?
That's the question. When do I get to go to Hawaii?
It's very nice, guys. I would recommend it.
Did you do the Jurassic Park tour?
This company does the helicopter tour, and there's two different versions. One, you get to fly into the fall and land there, and that was an extra $150. And I figured it's the exact same thing. Like, they still fly you to the fall. They show you around. They just don't land there. I didn't think that was worth the extra $150. So just.
Is the company owned by an old British man with a white beard who walks with a cane?
Little glasses.
I'd be really careful if it were.
I don't know who owns the company. They do have celebs who flew the plane, and they had a picture of old Stephen S. on there. I'm like, oh, that's nice that he got to fly this helicopter.
Steve. My buddy Steve. Right.
My friend Steve was here. He flew in this helicopter once.
My close personal friend.
Yeah. That's great. Well, you didn't miss a ton, I guess, in the last week. You came back just in time for the Chris Tanev trade. Mm-hmm. Maybe you were in the air. Maybe you landed. Maybe you were taking a nap. I'm not sure. But Sean and I just talked about the deal And obviously just wanted to get your thoughts too. You know, I was looking at your player cards, and I think one of the biggest takeaways, you know, we were just waxing poetic about Jim Neal. So we like the trade. But one of the biggest parts, Dom, is that there was surplus value on Tanev's $4.5 million cap hit on your player cards. And now they're getting Tanev at just over $1 million. So I assume that surplus value is going to go up quite a bit if you're the Dallas Stars. Just seems like a win all around for Jim Neal.
Yeah. First, I want to shout out to Shana Goldman for updating everything while I was gone.
I noticed that I kept meaning like text her and be like, all right, thanks for doing this. I forgot. Whoops.
Do you remember when I got to be on graph duty because you got locked out of your Twitter account on trade deadline day?
That was a bad time. I had a meltdown. I sent Shana like a 1,000 word document instructing like how to do everything, and she was a champ, and that's how we have an update Tanev player card.
Love that.
That basically says that if Jim Neal or didn't get any salary retention at all and got Tanev at full freight at $4.5 million, he'd still be not only worth it but like a positive value asset. So the fact that he got 75% off of someone who is still a $5 million defenseman with what he does in his own end with his puck moving ability. So what is it, like 1 million now?
1.125, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty tidy business, and gives the Stars the top four piece that they really needed. I updated their Stanley Cup probabilities this morning, and they jumped from 12.5% to 14.4%.
Ooh.
So they were already
teams to beat. So why did you make like a ghost sound?
He's just so excited by a 1.5 point bump from Chris Tanev.
That's pretty great for a defensive defenseman, right?
For one player.
Yeah, so
they also get him for four more games than they would have if they acquired him at the trade deadline, which I think is kind of an underrated part of this. Not that they're, you know, in some kind of crazy seeding battle, but you know, point matters down the stretch. It could get, if ideally you get there in a spot where you can play one of those wild card teams, that helps them down the line too, you know, because the division's a beast. You want to try to avoid, you know, the Colorados of the world as long as you can.
Yeah, that is honestly exactly and why their odds are better than the Jets or the Avs, is they have that chance to win the division. I do think they're the top team in the Central, and getting that top seed is huge in almost every division, because the wild card teams this year are pretty bad. Yeah.
So just for context, I'm looking at the updated projected standings, and it looks like the Carolina Hurricanes have the top odds to win the Stanley Cup, followed by the Stars and the Oilers at 14%. Mm-hmm. And both the Stars and the Oilers have a 25% chance of making the Cup final. So we're essentially projecting that they're going to be duking it out in the conference final.
Yeah. And that'd be pretty great.
Pretty unreal.
I think with how strong offensively both teams are.
Do you have, okay, so if we can, Tanev is one of the two best defensemen on the market. Whatever, we'll lump him in with Hanifin, depending on what you look for. You know, preferences may vary, but right shot, all that stuff. Who's at the top of that next tier for you now that, especially now that he's off the table? Like, is there a guy outside of the Noah Hanifin discussion? Because that's something else entirely. Is there a guy who, If you're a team who is looking at Chris Tanev and is now disappointed that you don't have him, like, who do they move on to? If you're, you know, Toronto or Vancouver or, you know, whoever else.
It is really tough, because I think there is a pretty dramatic drop off after Tanev. The next two best guys are Sean Walker and Alex Carrier, and both have been very good. Both have strong underlying numbers. They don't have the pedigree, the resume. They're both really small as well. And you wonder how that's going to work in a top four role in the playoffs. With Carey, I think his best times have been next to Yossi, if I'm not mistaken. And you do wonder how much of his impact is based on that. With Sean Walker, he was a cap dump just last year, and who knows if you're really getting this version of Sean Walker, who has been a strong puck mover and has done well in a Tortorella, but his minutes aren't like super tough in the same realm that that Tanev's are.
And then it seems like there might be another drop after those guys. You start, if you're looking at the trade board, you start talking about Matt Dumba as a right shot. You know, there's Eric Johnson. Like if you are a team who's looking for right side improvement specifically, like the pickings get slim real, real quick, which again, not to go back to what we said before, but that's what makes the return on Tanev like all the more confusing to me, is because everyone loves right shots, but even this year, even more so, there's just a gulf between Tanev and everyone else, it seems like.
Do you remember the Ben Chiarot trade price?
Uh-huh.
Like you can't honestly tell me that Tanev is less valuable than Ben Chiarot was at the deadline. Like, just it
did
doesn't
Chiarot
make sense.
Did Chiarot have a term, or was he also a UFA?
He was a UFA.
And he's just, I think he's only 2 years younger than Chris Tanev. Mind you, he was younger because this was a year or two ago. So we're talking about a 30, 31-year-old versus 34, but I still... Mm-hmm. I thought that Tanev would get a first.
Yeah, I was shocked that was a huge sticking point. I don't think Tanev is as good as he was last year or the year before that, but he's still done his job as a defenseman. He's just not bringing the same, I guess, offense as years past. Before, you could at least count on him to be sort of average and be an elite defenseman. Now he's sort of giving a bit back the other way, but he's still a genuine top four guy. And with the market being what it is, like, I guess you can add Jacob Chychrun to the list of guys who can be top pair defenseman, but is Ottawa going to trade him? I'm not sure. And Chychrun himself comes with question marks because he doesn't seem to handle tough minutes very well. And it did feel like Arizona kind of pumped and dumped him on Ottawa with playing him in pillow soft minutes last year, getting him to bump his numbers up, and now he just hasn't been all that great with the Sens, especially defensively. Like, offensively, he's still Chychrun. He has a booming shot. He can move the puck fine, but defensively, he's just been sort of blah.
Andrew Peak is number 32 on CJ's trade board. Like the right shot group just gets ugly in a hurry. So yeah, I don't know. Dom, is there anybody else on the list that you love that kind of stands out, that you feel like is flown under the radar? Not even necessarily defenseman, just from the group entirely.
Okay,
he's
thank you for
say
not saying
Frank
defenseman.
Petrano.
I'm not going to say Frank Petrano. I think Petrano is scoring. He's sort of like the Mikael Boedker of a few years ago, where he's on a bad team, getting a lot of minutes.
Deep cut, brother. Jesus.
He's getting points because of where he is in the lineup. An opportunity he's not going to get anywhere else on a contending team.
Petrano slander from you. I don't
I'm
like this
sorry,
one.
Sorry, Frank Petrano. I like what he can do. I just don't. I think people have to be weary of what they're paying for, which is just a guy who can score in a depth role and be a bit of disaster elsewhere. I like Pavel Buchnevich, who's been added to the trade board in the most recent update. I think if a team strikes out on Jake Guentzel, there's an actual backup plan you can have, because Buchnevich has been an unreal player for St. Louis for the last few years. Scored at a 90-point pace at certain points, 85, something around there. And he's not just someone who can score. He can drive play. He's pretty responsible in his own end. I think he's a fantastic player. And if you don't get Guentzel, Buchnevich is right there.
We talked about this last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago. It's all a blur on this great fun show that we do every Thursday. With Max instead of Dom now. I wonder if Dom was low-key offended. That's the question. Were you upset when we added Max as a full-time co-host and not you?
Was I upset that I had to do less work? No. I was good.
Smart. Okay, great.
Smart man.
Now the actual question, is there a more perfect trade than Jordan Eberle to the Edmonton Oilers? Question mark.
I don't think so. I love it a lot. The reunion would be amazing, and Eberle getting a cup with the team that drafted him would be something else. And I think there are probably some Oilers fans who aren't sure because of Eberle's perhaps past playoff disappearances, but I mean, he's still a fantastic player. He's someone who doesn't need the power play to score, which I think is something Edmonton really needs, and which is something that makes Jake Guentzel so attractive, is both these guys can score really well at 5-on-5 and drive play at even strength, and it gives them more beef in their top six. Not to shoo away the reunion, but another guy I like in that realm is Anthony Mantha.
Yes.
He's scoring at an insane clip this year for the Caps. He really has looked like his vintage self in a lesser role. And I think for any team's middle six, he's a really strong addition for what he can do with his shot and his ability to drive play at both ends of the ice, seemingly, because his defensive numbers are pretty strong this year.
He makes like 1.2 million more than Eberle, but I think, do the Caps have enough space that they could retain to make that work?
They can retain. Yeah. I had to write about the Caps deadline outlook yesterday. So I was shocked.
How does it look?
Anthony Mantha, 57% expected goals. Like,
mm-hmm. On the Caps?
He is on the Caps. 1.43 goals per 60, which is 43rd in the league, and tied with Kirill Kaprizov at 5-on-5, and Elias Pettersson, basically Elias Pettersson. Like, he's been really, really good. The 5.7 million is excessive, right? Like, that's a problem. But if you can get the Caps to retain half, and they can, because especially because his contract expires after this season, I think he is a really attractive option for someone who loses out on Guentzel, for sure. Like, would I sign Anthony Mantha to a new contract after this? I don't think so, but I'll take him for the stretch run at, 2.85, because he's been really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the money isn't real a lot of the times because of the way teams can naggle their way out of everything.
Look at Dallas. We like find someone else to do that.
Were we surprised by the New Jersey Devils popping off as like the team who could retain cap to facilitate a deal? I'm just not used to seeing a team that's like in the playoff race being like, yeah, we'll help make this happen for you.
It makes you wonder whether Tanev was. Who else was in on him? Was a Metro team in on him? Like, I don't know. Like, was Tom Fitzgerald trying to play keep away from someone else? Say, we reroute this guy to the Western Conference. That's the sort of stuff I think of whenever you see that. You're like, what does New Jersey have to gain from helping Dallas, score Chris Tanev? And I don't know. There could be something we're not privy to.
Do they not want Tanev themselves? Like, I don't know. Their defense isn't very good.
Is that it? Like, can't have them, so we want someone else to. We want somebody else to miss out. I don't know.
I feel like that doesn't really make sense. I feel like it would probably be that they're saving whatever, like they're saving their big bullets, so to speak, for a goalie. No, mm-hmm.
Or they just really wanted a fourth round pick, or Tom Fitzgerald.
They've got somebody circled.
Fitzgerald really likes Jim Nill. I don't know. Like, it's something's up there.
I mean, they've got LTIR, like they've got room because Dougie's on LTIR and he's probably not coming off until at least the playoffs if they make it, right? So it's like, why not get an extra asset? It's not going to eat at our bottom line too much. We'll still be able to make a move. It's kind of like smart and fun by Tom Fitzgerald. It was just unexpected. I think we're not used to seeing teams who are in the hunt be the facilitator of the bank, for lack of a better word. I want to go back to the Oilers quickly, Dom. Zach Hyman hits 40 last night. Connor McDavid scores as well. He had, what, 25 assists between his last two goals? And, like, you hear that, and it's like, did he not score for weeks? It was, like, 8 games or something. It's like, 2 days. Like, I don't, just something crazy for Connor McDavid. And, obviously, we went through some of the projections, and them and the Stars are projected to be on a collision for the Western Conference Final. Do you see the Oilers as, like, the best Stanley Cup contender? Like, how are you viewing this team right now? Because it's been a bit of a roller coaster for them, obviously. They had a really rough start.
Yeah, I think at the start of the year we had the Oilers as the Cup favorites, and they're still around that area, and just having Connor McDavid is the biggest cheat code you can have. You have the best player in the world, and you're going to be a contender most years as long as the rest of the roster isn't a complete tire fire. And that was the case for a lot of McDavid's career, but it isn't anymore. Draisaitl is obviously there. Bouchard has emerged as an elite number one D. Ekholm has helped Bouchard find that ability in a top four role. I think there's still pieces that those could add, but that's true of every contender. Every contender is missing something, and we don't need to say, oh, Oilers aren't it because they don't have this or whatever. They have a huge surplus in offensive value just from having McDavid, and that allows them to have a few more holes than maybe another contender would. I would love an Eberle trade there. I would love some defenseman that isn't Cody Ceci to play in the top four. But again, like,
back to slagging Cody Ceci. We took a break for a couple years.
He's fine. Like, I think there are a lot of Oilers fans who despise Cody Ceci, and a lot of Oilers media who say, cut him a lot of slack. And the answer is probably in the middle, that he's fine. If he's your second or third pair defenseman, you probably don't want him as the guy next to Nurse getting shut down minutes or whatever. I don't know. They're a very strong team. Their start obviously wasn't what it needed to be, but it didn't help that Skinner forgot how to make a save and McDavid forgot how to be McDavid. But those things have changed since, and I think them and Dallas are definitely the teams to beat in the West.
Here's something funny. I just crunched this real quick. When McDavid's goalless streak started, he was 16 points off the scoring lead. Now that his goalless streak is over, he is 9 points off the scoring lead. So that dude went however long it was without scoring a goal and closed the gap on Kucherov significantly. That must be nice. Yeah.
He had a lot of games in hand as well with him and on Kucherov and McKinnon. I think by pace, he was a lot closer than people thought, but now that it's even that pace is starting to catch up. And I still think McDavid is the best player in the world. I think he's the Hart Trophy favorite, unless someone does something.
Really?
I think his complete game this year has been the best of his career, and he's on pace for 136 points.
Huh.
He
I was going to say this feels like a year in which Connor McDavid is not like the one that everyone's discussing as who's going to win the Hart Trophy. I feel like Kucherov and McKinnon and Matthews have kind of dominated that conversation the last few weeks.
They have. McKinnon.
But we're all wrong.
Yeah. No, honestly, it's a very tight field. I think you have five, maybe six very strong candidates. And if you pick any of them, you probably have a very strong case for it.
Who's five and six then? Because you have McKinnon, McDavid, Kucherov, and Matthews, obviously at the top. But who's bringing up who else is on that top tier contenders?
I would say Quinn Hughes and Connor Hellebuyck. Hughes has been the best defenseman this year, and we haven't had a defenseman even nominated for the Hart since Chris Pronger. And Hughes, I think, has been near that level, at least for most of the season. The other four I would take over him, but he should be on the short list at least. And Connor Hellebuyck, what are the Jets without Connor Hellebuyck? They're still a good team, but they are not one of the best teams in the West, and he's just been amazing. So he should be on that list. But yeah, I do think that McDavid has been the best player this year still, even though the hype has been there for him. I think his 5-on-5 on ice numbers have been incredibly good. He is right there in the points race with Mikhail Kucherov and has been, I think, stronger in his own end than both of them. And I don't think he's been as strong defensively as Austin Matthews, but he's got a 14-point lead on him. Or, 17-point lead on him. So I think he just has the most complete game this year from how much he's doing offensively and how much he is helping in his own end as well.
Okay, well, I think it's like 5 a.m., 6 a.m. Hawaii time for Dom, so we'll let you go take a nap and, I don't know, get your affairs in order. Thanks for doing
this. Power rankings, brother.
Yeah.
No, not the power rankings. Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Happy to do this for the first time all year. It's fine. I'm not bummed. It's fine.
You don't like working, so don't.
Ironic. Somebody works so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Dom.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
All right, welcome back. This is a little segment today that we're going to call PWHL Corner.
Corner. It's there's a negative connotation there. I don't think.
Oh, what do you mean?
In the corner. You're bad, you go to the corner.
No.
No.
It's like the hot stove.
We're talking to the right person if we want to turn this into the hot stove, the PWHL hot stove segment. It's you.
I am on a hot stove sometimes. I actually don't even know if that's what it's called. I shouldn't say that. I think it's like a sponsored segment too. So sorry.
Who cares?
Anyways.
You've been very busy. That's what's important.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot going on. I'm in Montreal right now. And I've got a meeting for a story that I'm working on that I'm very excited about coming up in the next hour or so. So that'll be out at some point in time in the future. And this morning, I had a big story come out about Sarah Nurse and just kind of like the business of Sarah Nurse, which if you're a dedicated listener to the show, first off, I'm sorry, but also thank you. And then you'll remember that during All-Star Weekend, we were talking about how I was running around and had some super secret story that I was working on. And I followed Sarah Nurse around during NHL All-Star Weekend for a story about everything that she does off the ice and like the business of Sarah Nurse. And that story just came out. If you're interested, check it out. And I've just got to say, I followed her around for part of one day. And I remember saying to her agent, like, wow, I really need a nap. And she's like, are you kidding me? You've been here for like 2 minutes.
You said that out loud.
Oh, yes. She was like, okay, well, we've got five more things to get to. And I just was like sitting.
Watching Sarah Nurse has made you extremely tired. Yes.
Ooh, I was walking around. I was standing, I was sitting. It was a lot. She's a very busy person, very impressive person. And it was just it's a story I've been interested in doing for a while because over the last few years, we've seen the Sarah Nurse Barbie, Sarah Nurse on the cover of NHL 23, Sarah Nurse on a Cheerios box. By the way, the multi-grain Cheerios box that Sarah Nurse was on, this didn't make it into the final cut of the story because it would have just been a drop-in. The multi-grain Cheerios outsold the Cheerios that Connor McDavid was on. Which is so funny. And I was like, that's the upset of the year, is that the multi-grain Cheerios were the best seller of the Cheerios boxes that included Mark McMorris, Connor McDavid, and Sarah Nurse. And Sarah was like, that's grandma's favorite, man. Like, my grandma stocked up.
Multigrain. That's it. Grandma Nurse is
Grandma Nurse
making healthy choices.
Loves like multigrain Cheerios.
I feel like you were gonna say that like she was on a box of Honey Nut Cheerios and that Connor was on, like, so you can sort of like see maybe it has nothing to do with the people that are on the boxes because Honey Nut Cheerios are just better.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
She's moving boxes of multigrain. Like
multigrain Cheerios outsold Connor McDavid. Like,
very impressive.
If you want to know about this business of Sarah Nurse, just know that I should have included that in the story, actually. But I don't know. Do people like multigrain Cheerios or do they just love Sarah Nurse? I think it's the latter. So that story came out, which was super fun to report. But also, we had some PWHL news that I want to get your opinion on, Sean. This is why we're talking about the PWHL here in this segment. So the league announced yesterday a few changes for their, well, not, I shouldn't call them changes because they've never had playoffs or a draft lottery before. They had one lottery. They just did it like the way that we do. I think the first ever draft lottery, they just did it the way that we do a lottery when like you, me and Max are doing something. They just had like website. They just wrote like Montreal, Toronto, and like like a fantasy draft lottery. It's like Jaina on like Jaina fantasy Heffer football draft lottery.com or whatever.
Very, very funny.
So I shouldn't call it changes, but so essentially the league has announced that they are adopting the gold plan for their draft order selection process, which is essentially the concept that kind of came out back in 2012 from Adam Gold at, I think it was the Sloan Analytics Conference, which I believe might be happening this week. Like the timing is usually around this time. It's kind of compelling timing that essentially says, like, you start collecting points once you're eliminated from the playoffs, and then however many points you have in that kind of draft order point system will tell you who gets the first overall pick or the second. So in the PWHL, once you're eliminated from playoff contention and four teams make the playoffs, so once you're eliminated, you'll start getting draft order points, and then it'll just be two teams who don't make the playoffs. So we're going to have a battle at the end between like Ottawa and New York for Sarah Fillier, which I think is going to be really interesting. And then there's going to be a fight to the finish to finish first, because for the playoffs, whoever finishes first gets to pick their first round opponent between the third and the fourth place teams, which I think is kind of great, actually, because the second place team will get to keep their home ice advantage. So there's going to be some chaos there. I'm just curious, Sean, like, let's start maybe with the draft lottery. Just what do you think about the PWHL making that change? And I know, because McIndoo is a huge fan, your friend and co-host McIndoo on Wednesdays. So what do you think? Are you team DGB on the gold plan?
Lots of people have made lucrative careers out of ripping off Sean McIndoo. Let me just say that. Present company included. And I'm glad to see that leagues are figuring it out too. That dude is an endless stream of ideas, right? When it comes to that stuff, he knows which stuff to push. He does it in the right way. So that dude has been, they might as well call the gold plan the DGB plan for as hard as that dude has pushed it over the last couple of years. So it's great to see them kind of adopt it. Now, if there's an issue with the gold plan, it's that it kind just generally in any league where it were to be adopted, it would kind of put a little bit of a damper on the deadline, on the trade deadline. That's always the concern, right? In the PWHL, especially at the moment, that does not matter because trades aren't going to have, like, as you've said, trades, there's going to be less trades than you see in other leagues because they're not trading draft picks yet. So
this season,
that's less of a concern this season, right? So, you know, if there's any concern, like, that's it. And I, for one, don't really care about it in the first place. And B, it's like currently less of an issue for that league than there would be for others. Another fun thing about the gold plan too is that it doesn't just reward teams who accumulate points down the stretch. And I think that's something that people mischaracterize, because if you're good at the end of the season, you know, you're rewarded. Yes. Mm-hmm. You have more time to accumulate points based on how truly terrible you are. So if you really stink, if you're the San Jose Sharks or whatever, you have and you can start accumulating points the day you're eliminated. And that gives you a leg up on the teams that maybe hang around longer and wait until the last few days. It's not just strictly about, you know, playing hard and avoiding tanking. Like, you are still rewarding teams that are fundamentally terrible, which I think is, you know, kind of an important part of it. But I love all of it. I think, you know, it speaks to something, great about the PWHL, which you've seen from the start, is that they're not afraid, because they're starting from a blank piece of paper. They're not afraid to incorporate stuff that maybe the NHL is, you know, can't quite stomach because of tradition and, you know, power structures and all that sort of stuff. The PWHL has said, whether it's the jailbreak goal or whatever else,
the 3-2-1 point system, which I also love.
Of course, they're like, you know, let's go, let's do it. We're not tied to any pre-existing system. Like, we might as well just make this as interesting and as differentiate us ourselves as much as we can. So I love it.
Yeah, I think it's been really cool to see how they have tinkered with things that don't inherently change the way the game is being played, right? Like, you've got the 3-2-1 point system, which is great. I think the jailbreak goal too, and I've talked to players about it, like, that's not changing how they, and the jailbreak rule, for people who maybe don't know, if you score shorthanded, your penalty ends. Like, if you score while you're shorthanded, your player comes out of the box, which is, I think, such a great and fun rule, but it's not inherently changing the way teams are penalty killing. I've talked to players that, like, our first choice is obviously still to kill the penalty, but if you get an opportunity, yeah, you're going to take it. But, like, players aren't saying, like, I'm going to cheat out of the zone to try to score. Like, you still have to play defense. You still have to PK. But it's just added, like, a fun layer to watching teams on the penalty kill. It adds, like, a fun extra layer to games, right? And I think that's what the league has tried to do, is, you know, make changes that can, you know, be more entertaining, get new fans in the building, like, get more eyeballs on the game, make things more fun. And I just think it's been kind of cool to see. And, like, Jaina Hefford, I asked her about it, like, yesterday there was a midseason avail with Jaina Hefford, who's the senior vice president of hockey operations for the league, and Stan Kasten, who's on the advisory board, friend of the show, Stan Kasten. and she said, like, the great thing is if one of these rules doesn't work, we can just go back to what's worked in the past. Like, we're not afraid to try something new. And if we have to go back to what the tried and true method is from the NHL, we'll do it. Like, who cares? It's not that deep. Let's try this draft lottery.
I think you said something too. I think you said something too that's important, and we saw it in action yesterday. The amount of attention that making decisions like this draws on the league is it's significant, right? So if you are, because I saw people, not even outside women's hockey, outside hockey entirely, they looked at that announcement yesterday about the gold plan, because tanking is a problem across sports. It's something anybody who follows any sport or covers any sport has a vested interest in, because it's a problem and something that, you know, leagues are continually trying to solve. So you make that announcement yesterday, you got people who cover the NBA, where it's a huge, huge deal in particular, and MLB, where it's become a major issue over the last couple of years too. They're looking at that and they're saying, look at what the PWHL is doing. And there is major, major currency in that, to the point where if it works, is almost immaterial, right? Like, if it turns out that this doesn't change anything, and it, you know, if we're 2 years down the line and it's like having some kind of adverse effect on the deadline that they want to mitigate, like, whatever, that's fine. Change it. Who cares?
Yeah.
It doesn't change the fact that here in February of 2024, they're doing something that is getting eyeballs on that sport outside the sphere entirely that they wouldn't otherwise. I think it's a great, great move.
And I think we have to consider too, you know, the PWHL has had a very great start to its inaugural season, right? The average attendance is over 5,000 across the league in the first half. Things are going well. We just had this big midseason press conference where people are being like, are you going to expand already? Like, are you going to move to bigger buildings? Are you going to like raise the salary cap? Like, everything's going so well. So how are you going to improve everything? And I think from people in the league I've spoken to, it's like, yes, things are going really well right now, but we need to make sure we can keep people's attention, you know, in the middle of March or May or, you know, in year two. And I think what the gold plan does is, you know, I think in terms of the actual draft order, it's not going to be as like fun and exciting because it's a 16 league versus if the NHL were to adopt it, because there's 32 teams, there's more chaos that comes from that. Right. But I think like at the end of the day, every team in the league, anywhere in the standings is going to be playing meaningful hockey in the PWHL. And these games are going to give fans a reason to watch, right? Like, can you imagine, you know, a early May game between, I should check the schedule, but, and I'm just projecting out based on where people are in the standings right now, but like a late season game between Ottawa and New York or whoever's bottom two, they face off at the end of the season and they know that Sarah Filliere, if there's an undisputed first overall pick this year, it's her. And they are picking it out to get the best college player, the best player coming in this draft. Like, that is exciting. That's going to get local fans to watch. It's going to get national people to watch, because it's going to be like, whoever wins this game, or it's late in the season and Ottawa and whoever, the bottom two teams are tied and someone has to win to get Filliere. Like, that's compelling. That's fun. Totally. And the league has done a good job so far of putting these peaks in, right? They had the first month of the season, rah, 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 super exciting, all these home openers. And then they got the Scotiabank game and in the All-Star game. Like, they're really good at making sure that there's peaks of people saying, like, it's the middle of February. How are we going to get people to watch the league? Let's put something to grab everyone's attention again. And I think the gold plan is going to add some more towards the end of the year, which is already going to be, I think, a good time for people to watch, because it's coming out of world championships. People are going to watch Canada, the US, or whoever win a gold medal and be like, ooh, I'm going to go and watch Taylor Heise play in Minnesota, because I just watched her at Worlds and she's unbelievable. So the league has done a really good job at like putting in these, you know, points of interest. And I think the gold plan is going to extend the level of interest that they're going to have late into the season when they're competing with a really important time in the NHL calendar too.
Because it is, it's the single most important thing that they can do, is making sure that every game in one way or another has meaning. And that's the way to do it towards the end. I think it's great. And I think it speaks to not just a level of innovation, but a level of,
a willingness to apply
stuff like that. They didn't invent the 3-2-1 plan. They just had the guts to actually put it in place, right? Okay. They didn't invent the concept of the jailbreak goal, but they're saying like, yeah, whatever, why not? Let's do it. So I'm down.
Okay, last question, Sean. If you're the first place team, if you're Montreal and you get to pick between the third and fourth place team to play in the playoffs, are you just taking the fourth place team because you don't want to be bulletin board material for the third? Like, can you imagine picking the third place team because you're like, we match up better against them, and just getting dusted? Because like, that's the whole quote unquote bulletin board thing. So I that's my one concern, is that teams are going to be like boring and conservative about this and just pick the
I think they probably will be, but just the idea that they can it adds some level of drama, even if it leads to the boring rote kind of conclusion. The fact that the road that you took there is a little bit more interesting than it would be otherwise counts for something. Yeah. Right?
And like, they have 24 hours to make the decision, I think, was one of the things as well. So it's like, you can't just
What's going to be really fun is if it's in 5 years and we're talking about an X team league with a number that's bigger than six. That's when it gets more interesting, because the top team is only going to be choosing between two, right? They're choosing between four or six or eight.
Yeah.
Like, I think it gets a lot more interesting, and I hope it's still in place whenever the league does seem to expand.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fun. That's been the PWHL Hot Stove and this episode of the Athletic Hockey Show. Thanks everyone for listening. Just a reminder, you can leave us a rating and review if you're enjoying the show. We'd really appreciate that. And right now you can get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic for $2 a month when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. The prospect series with Max and Corey drops on Friday. If What is Max going to record that show and not this show?
Yeah, of course he is. His sinus infection is going to magically clear up by then, I'm sure.
He's going to blow his nose and be able to talk on a podcast also, all of a sudden.
Can I say something?
Yeah, for sure.
PWHL air fryer. It's not quite a hot stove. Thank you very much. What? Let that sponsorship money roll in. That's what you can call it.
I already have an air fryer.
The PWHL. It doesn't matter. You have a stove, too. It doesn't stop you from using it.
Anyways, thanks everyone for listening. I don't understand the air fryer thing. Thanks, Sean.
Welcome.